He mustered a faint smile. That much is true. He reached behind him. From the hood of his car, he hefted a large green insulated pack, the kind Fadlan's falafel used for deliveries. This is for you, Magnus. I hope you enjoy. The scent of fresh falafel wafted out. True, I'd eaten falafel just a few hours ago, but my stomach growled because, well, more falafel. Man, you're the best. I can't believe... Wait, you're in the middle of a fast and you brought me food? That seems wrong. Just because I'm fasting doesn't mean you can't enjoy. He clapped me on my shoulder. You'll be in my prayers. All of you. I knew he was sincere. Me, I was an atheist. I only prayed sarcastically to my own father for a better color of boat. Learning about the existence of Norse deities and the nine worlds had just made me more convinced that there was no grand divine plan. What kind of god would allow Zeus and Odin to run around in the same cosmos, both claiming to be the king of creation, smiting mortals with lightning bolts and giving motivational seminars? But Amir was a man of faith. He and Samira believed in something bigger, a cosmic force that actually cared about humans. I suppose it was kind of comforting to know Amir had my back in the prayer department, even if I doubted there was anybody at the other end of that line. Thanks, man. I shook his hand one last time. Amir turned to Sam. They stood a few feet apart, not touching. In all the years they'd known each other, they had never touched. I wondered if that was killing Amir even worse than the fasting. I wasn't much of a toucher myself. But every once in a while, a hug from somebody I cared about could go a long way. Caring about each other as much as Sam and Amir did, and not even being able to hold hands? I couldn't imagine that. I love you, Amir told her. Samira stumbled backward like she'd been hit in the face with a giant eagle egg. Alex propped her up.
Yes.
Sam squeaked.
Also, two.
Amir nodded. He turned and got into his car. A moment later, his taillights disappeared down Flagship Way. Samira smacked her own forehead.
Also, two? I am such an idiot.
Alex patted her arm. I thought you were quite eloquent. Come on, sister. Your neon yellow warship awaits. We undid the mooring lines, extended the mast, hoisted the sail, and did a bunch of other nautical stuff. Soon, we were leaving Boston behind, sailing through the mouth of the channel between Logan Airport and the Seaport District. I liked the Big Banana a lot more when it wasn't bouncing through subterranean rapids or drifting toward interdimensional waterfalls. A strong wind filled the sail. The sunset turned the downtown skyline to red gold. The sea stretched ahead of us in silky sheets of blue, and for now, all I had to do was stand at the prow and enjoy the view. After a long, hard day, I might even have been able to relax, except I kept thinking about my Uncle Randolph. He had once sailed out of this same harbor, searching for the Sword of Summer. His family had never come back. This is different, I told myself. We've got a well-trained crew of Inherjar and the stubbornest, most devout Valkyrie in Valhalla. Loki's voice echoed through my head. Poor Sam and Alex. This quest will destroy them. They have no idea what they'll be facing.
Shut up,
I murmured.
Sorry?
I hadn't realized Samira was standing right next to me. Nothing. Well, not really nothing. I had a little visit from your dad. I told her the details. Samira grimaced.
So the usual, then. Alex has been having visions and nightmares, too, pretty much daily.
I scanned the deck, but Alex must have been below. Really? He didn't say anything about that to me. Samira shrugged like, that's Alex. What about you? I asked. Any visions? She tilted her head.
No, which is interesting. Ramadan tends to focus the mind and strengthen the will. That could be why Loki hasn't been inside my head. I'm hoping...
She let the thought trail off, but I caught her meaning. She hoped her fasting might make it harder for Loki to control her. It seemed like a long shot to me. Then again, if my dad could make me do anything he wanted simply by commanding me, I would have been willing to try anything, even forgoing falafel sandwiches to thwart him. Every time Sam said her father's name, I heard the rage simmering inside her. She hated being under his power. A passenger jet took off from Logan and roared overhead. From TJ's lookout at the top of the mast, he raised his arms and yelled, "Woohoo!" as the wind ruffled through his dark, curly hair. Being from the 1860s, TJ loved airplanes. I think they seemed more magical to him than dwarves, elves, or dragons. I felt clanging and bumping below us, Alex and Mallory probably, getting all our supplies stowed away. Half-born Gunderson stood aft, leaning on the rudder and whistling, "Fly me to the moon." Stupid Valhalla elevator music earworms. "Sam, you'll be ready," I said at last. "You'll beat Loki this time." She turned to gaze at the sunset. I wondered if she was waiting for dusk, when she could eat and drink, and, most important, curse again.
"The thing about that," she said, "is I won't know until I actually face Loki. Alex's training is all about loosening me up, getting me more comfortable with shape-shifting, but..." She swallowed. "I don't know that I want to be more comfortable with it. I'm not like Alex."
That was undeniable. When Sam had first told me about her shape-changing abilities, she'd explained that she hated to use them. She saw it as giving in to Loki, becoming more like her father. Alex believed in claiming Loki's power as his own. Sam saw her Jotun heritage as poison that had to be expelled. She relied on discipline and structure. Pray more, give up food and drink, whatever it took. But shapeshifting, being fluid the way Alex and Loki were, that was alien to her, even though it was part of her blood. "You'll find a way," I said. "A way that works for you." She studied my face, perhaps trying to gauge whether I believed what I was saying.
"I appreciate that. But in the meantime, we have other things to worry about. Alex told me what happened at your uncle's place."
Despite the warm evening, I shivered. Thinking about wolves does that to me. "You have any thoughts about what my uncle's notes meant? Mead? Bulwark?" Sam shook her head.
"We can ask Hearthstone and Blitzen when we pick them up. They've been traveling, doing a lot of, what did they call it? Long-range reconnaissance."
That sounded impressive. Maybe they'd been networking with their contacts in Mimir's strange interdimensional mafia, trying to find us the safest course through the seas of the Nine Worlds. But the image that kept coming to my mind was Blitzen shopping for new outfits, while Hearthstone stood idly nearby, arranging runes into various spells to make time go faster. I'd missed those guys. "Where exactly are we meeting them?" I asked. Sam pointed ahead.
"Deer Island Lighthouse. They promised they'd be there at sunset today. Which is now."
Dozens of islands dotted the coastline off Boston. I could never keep them all straight, but the lighthouse Sam was talking about was easy enough to distinguish. A squat building with a mast thing on top, jutting out of the waves like the conning tower of a concrete submarine. As we got closer, I waited to spot the glinting chainmail waistcoat of a fashionable dwarf, or an elf in black waving a candy-striped scarf. "I don't see them," I muttered. I glanced up at TJ. "Hey, you see anything?" Our lookout seemed paralyzed. His mouth hung open, his eyes wide in an expression I'd never associated with Thomas Jefferson Jr. Pure terror. Next to me, Sam made a strangled sound. She backed away from the prow and pointed to the water between us and the lighthouse. In front of us, the sea had started to churn, swirling into a downward funnel like someone had pulled the bathtub plug out of Massachusetts Bay. Rising from the maelstrom were the giant, watery forms of women, nine in all, each as large as our ship, with dresses of foam and ice, and blue-green faces contorted with rage. I just had time to think, Percy didn't cover this in basic seamanship. Then the giant women fell on us like a vengeful tsunami, plunging our glorious yellow warship into the abyss. Chapter 8. In the Hall of the Huffy Hipster. Hurtling to the bottom of the sea was bad enough. I didn't need the singing, too. As our ship tumbled, free-falling through the eye of a saltwater cyclone, the nine giant maidens spiraled around us, weaving in and out of the tempest so they appeared to drown over and over again. Their faces contorted in anger and glee. Their long hair lashed us with icy spray. Each time they emerged, they wailed and shrieked, but it wasn't just random noise. Their screams had a tonal quality, like a chorus of whale songs played through heavy feedback. I even caught snippets of lyrics. Boiling mead, wave daughters, death for you. It reminded me of the first time Halfborn Gunderson played Norwegian black metal for me. After a few bars, it dawned on me. Oh, wait. That's supposed to be music. Sam and I locked arms on the rigging. TJ straddled the top of the mast, screaming like he was riding the world's most terrifying carousel pony. Halfborn wrestled the rudder, though I didn't see what good that would do in a downward plunge. Below decks, I heard Mallory and Alex getting thrown around. Kaflump! 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 Like a pair of human dice. The ship spun. With a cry of despair, TJ lost his grip and hurtled into the maelstrom. Sam zoomed after him. Thank goodness for Valkyrie powers of flight. She tackled TJ around the waist and zigzagged back to the ship with him, dodging the grasping hands of the sea giantesses and various pieces of luggage we were shedding like ballast. As soon as she reached the deck, bloosh! Our ship splash landed and then sank. The biggest shock was the heat. I'd been expecting a freezing death. Instead, I felt like I'd been dunked in a scalding bathtub. My back arched, my muscles contracted. I managed not to inhale any liquid, but when I blinked, trying to see which way was up, the water was a strange, cloudy golden color. That can't be good, I thought. The deck surged beneath me. The big banana broke the surface of wherever we were. The storm had vanished. The nine giantesses were nowhere to be seen. Our ship bobbed and creaked on the placid golden water that bubbled around the hull, exuding a smell like exotic spices, flowers, and baked goods. In every direction rose sheer brown cliffs, a perfect ring about a mile in diameter. My first thought was that we'd been dropped in the middle of a volcanic lake. Our ship seemed to be in one piece, at least. The wet yellow sail flapped against the mast. The rigging glistened and steamed. Samira and TJ got to their feet first. They slipped and staggered aft, where Halfborn Gunderson was slumped over the rudder, blood dripping from an ugly gash on his forehead. For a moment, I thought, Halfborn gets killed that way all the time. Then I remembered we were not in Valhalla anymore. Wherever this was, If we died here, we would not get a do-over. He's alive, Sam announced. Knocked out cold, though. My ears still rang from the weird music. My thoughts moved sluggishly. I wondered why TJ and Sam were looking at me. Then I realized, oh right, I'm the healer. I ran over to help. I channeled Frey power to heal Gunderson's head wound as Mallory and Alex, both battered and bleeding, staggered out from below decks. What are you fools doing up here? Mallory demanded. As if in answer, a storm cloud rolled overhead, obscuring half the sky. A voice boomed from above. What are you doing in my cauldron? The storm cloud descended, and I realized it was a face. A face that did not look happy to see us. From my previous dealings with giants, I'd learned that the only way to process their immense size was to focus on one thing at a time. A nose the size of an oil tanker, a beard as thick and vast as a redwood forest, round, gold-rimmed glasses that looked like crop circles, and on the giant's head, what I'd taken for a storm front was the rim of the universe's largest Panama hat. The way his voice echoed in the basin, pinging off the cliffs with tinny reverberations, made me realize we were not, in fact, in a volcanic crater. Those cliffs were the metal rim of a huge pot. The steaming lake was some kind of brew, and we'd just become the secret ingredient. My friends stood with their mouths open, trying to make sense of what they were seeing, all except half-born Gunderson, who wisely remained unconscious. I was the first to regain my wits. I hate it when that happens. Hello, I said to the giant. I'm diplomatic that way, always knowing the right greeting. Frowny McHuge face furrowed his brow, giving me flashbacks to my sixth grade science lesson on plate tectonics. He glanced to either side and called out, Daughters, get over here! More gigantic faces popped up around the rim of the pot. The nine women from the maelstrom, but much larger now, their frothy hair floating about their faces, their smiles a little too manic, their eyes bright with excitement or hunger. I hoped it wasn't hunger. It was probably hunger.
We got them, Dad!
One of the women squeaked. Or it would have been a squeak if she hadn't been the size of South Boston.
Yes, but why? Their father asked.
They're yellow,
another giantess chimed in.
We noticed them right away. With a ship that color, we figured they deserved to drown.
I mentally began composing a list of words that began with F. Frey, father, false, friend, frick, frack, and some others.
Also,
said a third daughter,
one of them mentioned mead. We knew you'd want to talk to them, Dad. That's your favorite word.
Whoa, whoa, whoa!
Alex Fierro waved his hands like there was a flag on the play.
Nobody here was talking about mead. There's been some kind of mistake.
He hesitated, then frowned at me.
Right?
I pointed to Samira, who backed away, out of range of Alex's cutting wire.
I was just explaining.
Doesn't matter, boomed Frowny. You're here now, and I can't have you in my cauldron. I'm just cooking down the mead. A Viking ship could totally ruin the flavor of the honey.
I glanced at the bubbling liquid around us. I was suddenly glad I hadn't inhaled any of it. Honey? I asked.
Don't you dare call me that,
Alex growled. Possibly he was kidding. I didn't want to ask. A massive hand loomed over us, and Frowny plucked up our ship by the mast.
They're too small to see properly, he complained. Let's scale things down.
I hated it when gigantic people changed the proportions of reality. Instantly, the world telescoped around me. My stomach imploded. My ears popped. My eyes expanded painfully in their sockets. Boom! Scrape! Thump! I stumbled over my own feet and found myself standing with my friends in the middle of a vast Viking hall. In one corner, our ship lay on its side, hot mead still dripping from the hull. The room's walls were columned with dozens of ship keels, soaring hundreds of feet up and curving inward to form the rafters of a peaked ceiling. Instead of planks or plaster filling in the space between the columns, there was nothing except rippling green water, held in place by no physics that made sense to me. Here and there, doors lined the watery walls, leading to other undersea chambers, I guessed. The floor was carpeted in squishy kelp that made me glad I had shoes on. The hall's layout wasn't much different than your typical Viking party pad. A rectangular feasting table dominated the space, with chairs of carved red coral along either side, and an elaborate throne at the far end, decorated with pearls and shark jaws. Freestanding braziers burned with ghostly green flames, filling the hall with a smell like toasted seaweed. Hanging over the main hearth fire was the cauldron we'd been floating in, though it now appeared much less massive, maybe just big enough to cook a team of oxen in. The pot's polished bronze sides were engraved with designs of waves and snarling faces. Our host, Captor, the frowny daddy giant guy, stood before us, his arms crossed, his brow knit. He was now only twice as tall as a human. The cuffs of his army green skinny jeans were turned up over pointy black boots. His suit vest was buttoned over a white dress shirt, the sleeves pushed back to show lots of swirling runic tattoos on his forearms. With his Panama hat and his gold-rimmed glasses, he looked like an agitated Whole Foods shopper, stuck in the express line behind a bunch of people with too many items, when all he wanted to do was purchase his macrobiotic matcha smoothie and leave. Behind him, in a loose semicircle, stood the 9 wave girls, who were not, shockingly, doing the wave. Each giantess was terrifying in her own special way, but they all leered and giggled and pushed each other around with the same level of excitement, like fans waiting for a star to come through the stage door so they could tear him to pieces to show their love. I recalled my encounter with the sea goddess Ran, who had described her husband as a hipster who liked microbrewing. At the time, the description had been too weird to comprehend. Afterward, it had seemed funny. Now, it seemed a little too real, because I was pretty sure the hipster god in question was standing right in front of me. "You are Aegir," I guessed. "God of the sea." Aegir grunted in a way that implied, "Yeah, so? You still tainted my mead." "And these," I gulped, "these lovely ladies are your daughters?" "Of course," he said. "The 9 giantesses of the waves. This is Heminglava, Hevring, Hrone."
"I'm Hevring, Dad," said the tallest girl. "She's Hrone."
"Right," said Aegir. "And Oon, and Bulgua?"
"Bigly?" asked Mallory, who was doing her best to hold up a half-conscious half-born.
"Nice to meet you all,"
Samira yelped, before Aegir could introduce Comet, Cupid, and Rudolph.
"We claim guest rights!"
Samira was smart. In certain polite Jotun households, claiming guest rights could get you a free pass from being slaughtered, at least temporarily. Aegir harumphed.
"What do you take me for, a savage? Of course you have guest rights. Despite the fact that you ruined my mead, and you have an insultingly yellow ship, you're in my house now. We at least have to have a meal together before I decide what to do with you. Unless one of you is Magnus Chase, of course, in which case I'd have to kill you right away. One of you isn't he, I hope."
No one responded, though my friends all glared at me like, "Dang it, Magnus."
"Just hypothetically," I said, "if we had a Magnus chase, why would you kill him?"
"Because I promised my wife Ran," Aegir cried. "For some reason, she hates that guy."
The nine daughters nodded vigorously, muttering,
"Hates him a lot. Yes, tons."
"Ah."
I was glad I was drenched in mead. Maybe it would hide the sweat popping up on my forehead.
"And where is your lovely wife?"
"Not here tonight," Aegir said. "She's out collecting trash in her nets."
"Thank gods," I said. "I mean, thank gods we at least get to spend some quality time with the rest of you."
Aegir tilted his head.
"Yes. Well, daughters, I suppose you should set extra places at the table for our guests. I'll talk to our chef about cooking up those juicy prisoners."
He waved toward one of the side doors, which swung open by itself. Inside was a vast kitchen. When I saw what was suspended above the oven, it took all my willpower not to scream like a wave giantess. Hanging in two matching extra-large canary cages were our long-range reconnaissance experts, Blitzen and Hearthstone. Chapter 9. I become a temporary vegetarian. That awkward moment when you lock eyes with two friends hanging in cages in a giant's kitchen, and one of them recognizes you and begins to shout your name, but you do not want your name shouted. Blitzen staggered to his feet, gripped the bars of his cage, and yelled,
"Magnificent!" I bellowed over him. "What beautiful specimens!"
I jogged toward the cages, Sam and Alex on my heels. Aegir frowned.
"Daughters, see to our other guests."
He made a sweeping take-out-the-trash gesture toward Mallory and TJ, who were still trying to keep our semi-conscious berserker from face-planting in the kelp. Then the sea god followed us into the kitchen. The appliances were all twice human size. The oven knobs alone would have made decent dinner plates. Hearthstone and Blitzen, looking unharmed but humiliated, dangled over the four-burner cooktop, their cages knocking against a tile backsplash that was painted with "Buon Appetito" in garish red cursive. Hearthstone wore his usual black biker outfit, his candy-striped scarf the only flourish of color. His pale face and white blonde hair made it difficult to tell if he was anemic or terrified or just mortified by the "Buon Appetito" sign. Blitzen straightened his navy blue blazer, then made sure his mauve silk dress shirt was properly tucked into his jeans. His matching handkerchief and ascot were a little askew, but the dude looked pretty good for a prisoner who was on today's dinner menu. His curly black hair and beard were well trimmed. His dark complexion coordinated beautifully with the iron bars of his cage. If nothing else, Aegir should have let him go for being a fellow snazzy dresser. I used a quick flurry of sign language to warn them, "Don't say my name. Aegir will kill me." I spelled out the god's name since I didn't know what name sign we might use for him. Frowny, Beerman, or H for hipster were all logical choices. The god appeared at my side.
"They are magnificent specimens," he agreed. "We always try to have a fresh catch of the day in case guests stop by."
"Right. Very smart," I said. "But do you normally eat dwarves and elves? I didn't think gods..."
"Gods?"
Aegir barked a laugh.
"Well, there's your mistake, little mortal. I'm not one of those namby-pamby Aesir or Vanir gods. I'm a Jotun deity. 100% giant."
I hadn't heard the term namby-pamby since third grade PE class with Coach Wicket, but I seemed to recall it not being a compliment.
"So,
You do eat dwarves and elves?
Sometimes.
Aegir sounded a bit defensive.
And the occasional troll or human. Though I draw the line at hobgoblin. Too gamey. Why do you ask?
He narrowed his eyes.
Do you have special dietary restrictions?
Sam, again, was quickest on the draw.
Yes, actually. I'm Muslim.
Aegir winced.
I see. Sorry. Yes, I don't think dwarves are halal. I'm not sure about elves.
They're not either, Sam said. In fact, it's Ramadan, which means I need to break my fast in the company of dwarves and elves, rather than eating them or being around anyone who does eat them. It's strictly forbidden.
I was pretty sure she was making that up, but what did I know? I suppose she was counting on Aegir knowing even less about Quranic restrictions than I did.
What a pity, our host sighed. And the rest of you?
I'm a vegetarian, I said, which wasn't true, but hey, falafel was a vegetable. I glanced at Blitz and Hearth. They gave me 4 enthusiastic thumbs up.
And I have green hair.
Alex spread his hands like, what are you gonna do?
I'm afraid eating dwarves or elves goes against my beliefs, but I very much appreciate the offer.
Aegir glowered, as if we were testing the limits of his culinary hospitality. He stared at Blitzen and Hearthstone, now leaning casually against the bars of their cages and trying to look as non-halal as possible.
So much for the catch of the day, Aegir grumbled. But we always do our best to accommodate our guests. Eldir?
He yelled the last word so loudly, I jumped and hit my head on the oven door handle. A side door swung open, and an old man shuffled out of the pantry in a cloud of smoke. He was dressed in a white chef's outfit, complete with poofy hat, but his clothes seemed to be in the process of combusting. Flames danced across his sleeves and apron. Smoke streamed from his collar like his chest was coming to a boil. Sparks wormed through his gray eyebrows and beard. He looked about 600 years old. His expression so sour, he might have spent that entire time smelling terrible things.
What is it? He snapped. I was preparing my elfish salt rub.
We'll need something different for dinner, Aegir ordered. No elf, no dwarf.
What?
Eldir grumbled.
Our guests have food restrictions. Halal, vegetarian, green hair friendly.
And it's Ramadan, Sam added. So you'll need to free those prisoners so they can break my fast with me.
Humph,
said Eldir.
Expect me to.
Mutter, mutter.
Short notice.
Mutter, mutter.
Green hair friendly menu? I may have some kelp patties in the freezer.
He tromped back into the pantry, still complaining and smoldering. I don't mean to be rude, I said to Aegir. But is your chef on fire?
Oh, Eldir has been like that for centuries. Ever since my other servant, Fimavang, got killed by Loki, which left Eldir with twice as much work and made him burning mad.
A little bubble of hope formed in my chest. Killed by Loki, you say?
Yes. Aegir frowned. Surely you heard how that scoundrel disgraced my hall.
I glanced at Sam and Alex like, hey guys, Aegir is another enemy of Loki. Then I remembered that Sam and Alex were both children of Loki. Aegir might not like my friends any more than he liked people named Magnus Chase.
Lord Aegir, Sam said. That time Loki disgraced your hall, was that the Feast of the Gods?
Yes, yes, Aegir said. A complete disaster. The gossip bloggers had a field day with it.
I could almost see Sam's mind working. If she'd been Eldir, steam would have been pouring from the edges of her hijab.
I remember the story, Sam said. She grabbed Alex's arm. I have to pray. Alex needs to help me.
Alex blinked. I do?
Lord Aegir, Sam continued. May I use a corner of your hall for a quick prayer?
The sea god tugged on his vest.
Well, I suppose.
Thanks.
Sam and Alex scurried out of the kitchen. I hoped they were going to formulate a cunning plan to get us all out of Aegir's hall alive. If Sam was really just going to pray, well, I wondered if she'd ever tried to say a Muslim prayer in the home of a Norse god. Sorry, Jotun deity, before. I was afraid the entire place might collapse from religious paradox. Aegir stared at me. That awkward dinner party silence when you've tried to serve dwarf and elf to a vegetarian.
I'm going to retrieve some mead from the cellar, he said at last. Please tell me you and your friends don't have dietary restrictions against mead.
I think we're good, I said, because I did not want to see a grown Jotun cry.
Thank the waves.
Aegir dug a set of keys from his vest pocket and tossed them to me.
Unlock the dinner. I mean the prisoners, would you? Then make yourself...
He waved vaguely toward the feast hall, then stomped off, leaving me to imagine how he might have finished that sentence. Comfortable? Scarce? A sandwich? I climbed the oven and freed Blitz and Hearth from their canary cages. We had a tearful reunion on the front left burner.
Kid!
Blitzen gave me a hug.
I knew you'd come rescue us!
Actually, I didn't know you guys were here. I used sign language as I talked, for Hearthstone's benefit, though it had been several weeks and my hands were slow. You get out of practice fast.
But I'm really glad I found you.
Hearthstone snapped his fingers for attention. I'm glad too, he signed. He patted the bag of runes at his belt. Stupid cages were magic-proof. Blitzen was crying a lot.
I was not,
Blitzen protested, signing along.
You were.
I was not, Hearthstone said. You were. At that point, the ASL conversation deteriorated into the two of them poking each other in the chest.
Guys, I interrupted. What happened? How did you end up here?
Long story, Blitz said. We were waiting for you guys at the lighthouse, minding our own business.
Fighting a sea serpent, Hearth signed. Doing nothing wrong, Blitz said. Hitting a serpent on the head with rocks.
Well, it was threatening us, Blitz said. Then this wave came up and swallowed us.
Wave contained 9 angry women. Serpent was their pet.
How was I supposed to know that?
Blitz grumbled.
The serpent didn't look like it was trying to play fetch. But that's not important, kid. We found out some information on our reconnaissance, and it isn't good.
Guests! Aegir called from Main Hall. Come! Join us for mead and food.
Put a pin in that, Hearthstone signed, poking Blitz in the chest one last time. Back in the days when we were 3 homeless guys on the streets of Boston, if somebody had called us for dinner, we would have come running. Now we trudged over reluctantly. This was one free meal I wasn't so pumped about. The 9 daughters of Aegir hustled about, setting the table with plates and forks and goblets. Aegir hummed as he fiddled with a rack of mead kegs, each labeled with runes. TJ, Mallory, and Halfborn were already seated, looking very uncomfortable in their red coral seats, with empty chairs spaced between them. Halfborn Gunderson, more or less conscious now, kept blinking and staring at his surroundings like he hoped he was dreaming. Over by the big banana, Samira finished her prayers. She rolled up her portable rug, had a brief, urgent conversation with Alex, then they both came over to join us. If Sam did have a brilliant plan, I was glad it didn't involve her and Alex turning into dolphins, yelling, "See you, suckers!" and escaping on their own. The dining table looked like it had been made from the world's largest mast, cut in half lengthwise and folded out to make two leaves. Overhead, suspended from the rafters by an anchor chain, was a sea glass chandelier. Instead of candles or electric lights, glowing souls of the dead swirled in oversized sconces, just to set the mood, I guessed. I was about to sit down between Blitz and Hearth when I realized there were name tags at the place settings. Dwarf, Crone, Elf, Hevering, Green Headscarf. I found mine on the other side of the table. Blonde Guy. Great. We had assigned seating. A daughter of Aegir sat down on either side of me. According to the name tags, the lady on my left was Kolga. The one on my right... oh boy. Apparently her name was... Blodughada. I wondered if that was the sound her mom had made on anesthesia after giving birth to daughter number 9. Maybe I could just call her Blode. "Hi," I said. Blode smiled. Her teeth were stained red. Her wavy hair was flecked with blood.
"Hello. It was a pleasure dragging you under the sea."
"Yeah, thanks." Her sister Kolga leaned in. Frost started to form on my forearm. Kolga's dress appeared to be woven from ice shards and slush.
"I hope we get to keep them, sister," she said. "They'd make fine tortured spirits."
Blode cackled. Her breath smelled like fresh ground beef just out of the fridge.
"Yes, indeed. Perfect for our chandelier."
"Appreciate the offer," I said. "But we actually have a pretty full calendar."
"Where are my manners?" Blode said. "In your language, I am called Blood Red Hair. My sister here is Freezing Wave. And your name is..."
She frowned at my card.
"Blonde Guy?"
I didn't see how that was any worse than Blood Red Hair or Bigly. "You can call me Jimmy," I offered. "In your language, that's... Jimmy." Blode didn't look satisfied with that.
"There's something about you."
She sniffed my face.
"Have you sailed over my blood red waters in a naval battle before?"
"Pretty sure not."
"Perhaps my mother, Ran, described you to me. But why would she?"
"Guests!" Aegir boomed, and I had never been happier for an interruption. "Here is my first microbrew of the evening. This is a peach lambic mead that makes a lovely aperitif. I welcome your comments after you try it." His 9 daughters oohed and awed as Aegir hefted the mead cask and carried it around the table, pouring everyone a serving. "I think you'll find this has a fruity edge," Aegir said, "with just a hint of..."
"Magnus Chase!"
Blode yelled, surging to her feet and pointing at me.
"This is Magnus Chase!"
Chapter 10. Can we talk about mead? Typical. Somebody says fruity edge, and immediately my name comes to mind. Come on, people. A little respect. The daughters of Aegir shot to their feet. Some picked up steak knives, forks, or napkins to stab, poke, or strangle us with. Aegir screamed,
"Magnus Chase? What is this deception?"
My friends and I didn't move a muscle. We all knew how guest rights worked. We still might be able to talk our way out of a fight, but once we drew our weapons, we stopped being considered guests and started being the catch of the day. against an entire family of Jotun deities on their home turf, I didn't like our odds.
"Wait," I said,
as calmly as I could, with a woman named Blood-Red Hair holding a knife over me.
"We're still guests at your table. We haven't broken any rules."
Steam rolled beneath the brim of Aegir's Panama hat. His gold-rimmed glasses fogged up. Under his arm, the mead cask began to creak like a pecan in a nutcracker.
"You lied to me," Aegir snarled. "You said you weren't Magnus Chase."
"You're going to break your cask," I warned. That got his attention. Aegir shifted the mead cask forward and held it in both arms like a baby.
"Guest rights do not apply. I granted you a place at my table under false pretenses."
"I never actually said I wasn't Magnus Chase," I reminded him.
"Besides, your daughters also brought us here because we mentioned mead."
Kolga snarled.
"And because you have an ugly yellow ship."
I wondered if everyone could see my heart beating through my shirt. It definitely felt that strong.
"Right, but also mead. We're here to talk about mead."
"We are?"
Halfborn asked. Mallory looked like she would have hit him, except there was a sea giantess in the way.
"Of course we are, you oaf!"
"So you see," I continued, "that wasn't a false pretense. That pretense was completely true." The daughters of Aegir muttered to themselves, unable to counter my flawless logic. Aegir cradled his cask.
"What exactly do you have to say about mead?"
"I'm glad you asked." Then I realized I had no answer. Once again, Samira to the rescue.
"We will explain," she promised. "But stories are better told over dinner. With good mead, are they not?"
Aegir stroked his cask affectionately.
"An aperitif with a fruity edge."
"Exactly," Sam agreed.
"So let's break our fast together. If you are not completely satisfied with our explanations at the end of the dinner, then you can kill us."
"He can?" TJ asked. "I mean, sure. He can." On my right, Blode's claw-like fingernails dripped with red salt water. On my left, a miniature hailstorm swirled around Kolga. Interspersed between my friends, the other seven daughters snarled like Tasmanian devil waterspouts. Blitzen put his hands on his chainmail vest. After getting stabbed by the Skolfnung sword a few months ago, he was a little sensitive about knife attacks. Hearthstone's eyes flicked from face to face, trying to keep track of the conversation. Lip-reading a single person was hard enough. Trying to read an entire room was nearly impossible. Mallory Keen gripped her mead goblet, ready to imprint its decorative design on the nearest giantess's face. Halfborn frowned sleepily, no doubt convinced now that this was all a dream. TJ tried to look inconspicuous as he dug into his pack of firing caps, and Alex Fierro just sat back calmly, sipping his peach lambic mead. Alex needed no preparation for battle. I'd seen how fast he could draw his garrote. The sea god Aegir was the tipping point. All he had to say was, "Kill them," and we were cooked like honey mead. We'd fight ferociously, no doubt, but we would die.
"I don't know," Aegir mused. "My wife said to kill you if I ever saw you. I was to drown you slowly, revive you, then drown you again."
That sounded like Rand talking.
"Great Lord," Blitzen chimed in, "did you swear a formal oath to kill Magnus Chase?"
"Well, no," Aegir admitted. "But when my wife asks..."
"You have to consider her wishes, of course," Blitz agreed. "But you also have to weigh that against guest rights, eh? And how can you be sure what to do until you've given us time to tell our whole story?"
"Let me kill them, father,"
growled the daughter with exceptionally big hands.
I will grasp them until they scream.
Silence, grasping wave, Aegir commanded.
Let me do the honors,
said another daughter, throwing her plate to the floor.
I will pitch them into Jormungand's mouth.
Hold, pitching wave, Aegir frowned. The dwarf has a point. This is a quandary.
He stroked his keg. I waited for him to say, my mead cask is angry, and when my mead cask is angry, people die. Instead, finally, he heaved a sigh.
It would be a shame to waste all this good mead. We will eat and drink together. You will tell me your story, paying special attention to how it relates to mead.
He gestured to his daughters to be seated again.
But I warn you, Magnus Chase, if I decide to kill you, my vengeance shall be terrible. I am a Jotun deity, a primordial force. Like my brothers fire and air, I, the sea, am a raging power that will not be contained.
The kitchen door burst open. In a cloud of smoke, Eldir appeared, his beard still smoldering and his chef's hat now on fire. In his arms was a leaning tower of covered platters.
Who had the gluten-free meal?
He growled.
Gluten-free? Aegir asked. I don't think we had gluten-free.
That's mine, said Blode.
She noticed my expression and scowled defensively.
What? I'm on an all-blood diet.
That's fine, I squeaked.
Okay, then, Aegir said, taking charge of the orders. Halal meal? That is Samira's. The vegetarian is Magnus Kill-Him-Later Chase. The green hair entree?
Right here, said Alex, which was probably unnecessary. Even in a room filled with sea giantesses, he was still the only one present with green hair. Platters were distributed. Mead was poured.
Right,
Aegir said, lowering himself into his throne.
Everybody good?
Got one left,
Eldir yelled.
The Buddhist meal?
That's me, said Aegir.
Don't stare, I told myself, as the primordial deity uncovered his platter of tofu and bean sprouts. This is all completely normal.
Now, where was I? Aegir said. Oh, yes, a raging power that cannot be contained. I will rip you all limb from limb.
The threat would have been more frightening if he hadn't been waving a steamed snow pea at us. Alex sipped from his goblet.
Can I just say that this mead is excellent? If I'm not mistaken, it has a fruity edge. How do you brew it?
Aegir's eyes lit up.
You have a discerning palate. You see, the secret is in the temperature of the honey.
Aegir began to hold forth. Alex nodded politely and asked more questions. I realized he was buying us time, hoping to draw out the meal while we thought of amazing things to say about mead. But I was fresh out of mead-related ideas. I glanced at Blode's plate. Big mistake. She was slurping away at a large red gelatin mold. I turned the other direction. Kolga's meal was a plate of different colored snow cones, arranged in a fan like peacock feathers. Kolga noticed me looking and snarled, her teeth like chiseled ice cubes. The temperature dropped so fast, frost crystals crackled in my ear canals.
What are you staring at, Magnus Chase? You can't have my snow cones.
No, I was just wondering, what side are you guys fighting on in Ragnarok?
She hissed.
The sea swallows everything.
I waited for more. That seemed to be her entire battle plan.
Okay, I said. So you're kind of neutral? That's cool.
Cool is good. Cold is better.
Right. But your dad isn't friends with Loki.
Of course not. After that horrible flighting, Loki disgraced this hall, the gods, my father, even my father's mead.
Right. The flighting. The words seemed familiar. I was pretty sure I'd seen it on the TV screen in Valhalla, but I had no idea what it meant. I don't suppose you've heard the name Bulwark? I asked, pressing my luck. Or what it might have to do with mead? Kolga sneered at me as if I were a fool.
Bulwark was the alias of the mead thief, of course.
The mead thief? That sounded like the title of a really bad novel to me.
The one who stole Kvasir's mead,
Kolga said.
The only mead my father cannot brew. Bah, you're clueless. I'll look forward to stuffing your soul in our chandelier.
She went back to enjoying her snow cones. Kvasir. Great. I asked about one name I didn't know, and I got another name I didn't know. But I felt like I was getting close to something important. Some combination of puzzle pieces that would explain Uncle Randolph's journal, give me his plan for beating Loki, and maybe even provide a mead-based solution for getting us out of this hall alive. Aegir continued holding forth about mead brewing, explaining to Alex the virtues of staggered yeast nutrients and hydrometers. Alex heroically managed to look interested. I caught Hearthstone's eye across the table. I signed, "What is a flyting? He frowned. "Contest." He raised his index finger and twirled it around like he was sticking it up. Ah, yes, the ASL symbol for insults. "And K-V-A-S-I-R?" I asked. Hearthstone pulled back his hands like he'd touched a hot stove. "Then you know?" Sam rapped her knuckles on the table to get my attention. Her hands flew in small, furious ASL gestures. "Been trying to tell you. Loki was here. Long ago. Insult contest. Have to promise Aegir revenge. Alex and I think there is mead we can use." "I got this," I signaled back. Amazingly, I felt like I had a plan. Not all the details, not even most of the details. More like I'd been spun around blindfolded, then somebody had put a stick in my hand and faced me in the general direction of the piñata and said, "Start swinging." But it was better than nothing. "Great Aegir!" I jumped up in my seat and climbed onto the table before I could think about what I was doing. "I will now explain to you why you should not kill us, and what it has to do with mead." Silence fell around the table. 9 storm giantesses glared at me, as if considering all the different ways they could pitch, grasp, hurl, or freeze me to death. At the edge of my vision, Alex flashed me a message in ASL. "Your fly is open." With superhuman willpower, I managed not to look down. I stayed focused on frowning Aegir and the single bean sprout dangling from his beard. The sea god grumbled.
"I was just explaining how to sanitize a fermenter. This interruption had better be good."
"It is," I promised, slyly checking my zipper, which was not in fact open. "Our crew is sailing forth to bring Loki to justice. He has escaped his bonds, but we mean to find his ship, Naglfar, before it can sail at midsummer, recapture Loki, and put him back in chains. Help us, and you will have vengeance for that terrible flighting." A puff of steam lifted Aegir's Panama hat, like the lid of a popcorn popper.
"You dare speak of that disgrace?" he demanded. "Here, at the very table where it happened?"
"I know, he flighted you," I yelled. "He flighted you bad.
You and all your godly guests got a mean flighting. He even flighted your mead. But we can defeat Loki and pay him back. I will challenge Loki myself.
Sam put her head in her hands. Alex stared at the ceiling and mouthed, "Wow. No." My other friends stared at me aghast, as if I'd just pulled the pin out of a grenade. I did that once on the battlefield in Valhalla before I fully understood how grenades worked. It had not ended well for the grenade or for me. Aegir became deadly calm. He leaned forward, the lenses flashing in his golden glasses.
You, Magnus Chase, would challenge Loki to a flighting?
Yes. Despite my friends' reactions, I still felt certain this was the correct answer, even though I didn't quite understand what it meant.
I will flight the heck out of him!
Aegir stroked his beard, found the bean sprout, flicked it away.
How would you achieve this? Not even the gods could match Loki in a flighting. You would need some incredible secret weapon to give you an edge.
Perhaps even a fruity edge, I thought, because this was the other thing I was sure of, even if I didn't totally understand it. I stood up straight and announced in my deepest, quest-accepting voice,
I will use the mead of Kevin!
Alex joined Samira in the Bury Your Face in Your Hands club. Aegir narrowed his eyes.
You mean the mead of Kvasir?
Yes, I said. That.
Impossible,
Kolga protested. Her mouth dyed 6 different colors from her snow cones.
Father, don't believe them.
And, great Aegir, I persisted. If you let us go, we'll even, bring you a sample of Kvasir's mead, since it is the only mead you can't brew yourself.
My friends and the 9 giantesses all turned to Aegir, waiting for his verdict. A thin smile played across the sea god's mouth. He looked like he'd managed to jump into a newly opened express lane at Whole Foods and finally scored his matcha smoothie.
Well, this changes everything, he said.
It does? I asked. He rose from his throne.
I would love to see Loki brought to justice, and in a flighting, no less. I would also love to get a sample of Kvasir's mead. And I would prefer not to kill you all, since I did grant you guest rights.
Great, I said. So you'll let us go?
Unfortunately, Aegir said, you're still Magnus Chase, and my wife wants you dead. If I let you go, she'll be mad at me. But if you were to escape, say, while I wasn't looking, and my daughters didn't manage to kill you in the attempt, well, I think we'd just have to consider that the will of the Norns.
He straightened his vest.
I am going to the kitchen to get some more mead now. I sure hope nothing unpleasant happens while I'm gone. Come along, Eldir.
The cook gave me one last smoldering leer.
Flight Loki once for Fimavang, will you?
Then he followed his master into the kitchen. As soon as the door closed, all 9 daughters of Aegir rose from their seats and attacked.
Chapter 11. My sword takes you to, dramatic pause, Funky Town. Back when I was a regular mortal kid, I didn't know much about combat. I had some murky ideas that armies would line up, blow trumpets, and then march forward to kill one another in an orderly fashion. If I thought about Viking combat at all, I would envision some dude yelling, "Shield wall!" and a bunch of hairy blonde guys calmly forming ranks and merging their shields into some cool geometric pattern like a polyhedron or a Power Ranger Megazord. Actual battle was nothing like that. At least, not any version I'd ever been in. It was more like a cross between interpretive dance, lucha libre wrestling, and a daytime talk show fight.
The 9 sea giantesses fell upon us with a collective howl of glee. My friends were ready. Mallory Keene flipped onto grasping waves back and plunged her knives into the giantess's shoulders. Half-born Gunderson dual-wielded mead goblets, slamming Hevering in the face and Oon in the gut. TJ lost valuable time trying to load his rifle. Before he could fire, the lovely Hemeen Glava turned into a tidal wave and washed him across the hall. Hearthstone threw a runestone I hadn't seen before. It hit Bigley, I mean Bulgua, with a bright flash, liquefying her into a large, angry puddle. Sam's spear of light shimmered in her hand. She flew upward, just beyond reach, and began blasting giantesses with arcs of pure Valkyrie radiance. Meanwhile, Blitzen hopped around the chaos, distracting the 9 sisters with blistering fashion critiques like, "Your hem is too high! You've got a run in your stocking! That scarf does not go with your dress!" Kolga and Blode lunged at me from either side. I valiantly slipped under the table and tried to crawl away, but Blode grabbed me by the leg and pulled me out.
"Oh no," she snarled, her teeth dripping red. "I'm going to rip your soul from your body, Magnus Chase."
Then a silverback mountain gorilla crashed into her, knocked her to the floor, and ripped her face off. That sounds gross. Actually, when the gorilla swiped Blode's face, the giantess's whole head simply dissolved into salt water, soaking the kelp carpet. The gorilla turned toward me, his eyes mismatched brown and gold. He grunted at me impatiently, like, "Get up, you idiot! Fight!" The gorilla turned to face Kolga. I staggered backward. Magic explosions, beams of light, axes, swords, and bad fashion insults flew everywhere, answered by blasts of salt water, shards of ice, and globs of blood-tinted gelatin. My gut told me that the giantesses would be much more powerful if they combined forces, like they had when they sank our ship. We were only alive so far because each of the sisters was so intent on killing her own target. We had succeeded at being just that individually annoying. If the 9 giantesses started singing their weird music again, working together as a team, we would be done for. Even fighting them separately, we were in trouble. Every time a giantess got vaporized or reduced to a puddle, she quickly reformed. We were outnumbered 9-8. No matter how well my friends fought, the giantesses had the home court advantage, and also immortality, which was a pretty big fruity edge. We had to find a way to get on our boat and get out of here, back to the surface and far away. For that, we would need a distraction, so I called on the most distracting being I knew. I pulled the runestone from my neck chain. Jack sprang into sword form.
"Hey, senor. You know, I was thinking about that Riptide girl. Who needs her, right? There are plenty of other swords in the armory, and... Whoa! Aegir's palace? Awesome! What meat is he serving today?"
"Help!"
I yelled as Blode rose in front of me, her face reattached, her talons dripping blood.
"Sure," Jack said amiably. "But man, Aegir's Oktoberfest pumpkin spice mead is to die for."
He zipped over to blood-red hair, placing himself between my assailant and me.
"Hey, lady," Jack said. "Wanna dance?"
"No,"
Blode snarled. She tried to get around him, but Jack was nimble. Yes, and quick, though I'd never seen him jump over candlesticks. He swerved side to side, presenting his edge to the giantess and singing Funky Town. Blode seemed unwilling or unable to get past Jack's magical blade, which bought me a few seconds of safety as Jack disco danced.
"Magnus!"
Samira zoomed by, 10 feet above me.
"Prepare the ship!"
My heart sank. I realized my friends were playing interference for me, hoping that I could somehow make our ship ready to sail again. Sad, deluded friends. I ran back to the big banana. The ship lay on its side, its mast piercing the wall of water. The current outside must have been strong, because it pushed the ship along the carpet ever so slightly. the keel leaving gouge marks in the kelp. I touched the hull. Thankfully, the boat responded, collapsing into a handkerchief, which I clutched in my hand. If I could get all my friends together, maybe we could jump through the wall of water simultaneously and summon the ship as the current carried us away from here. Maybe the ship, being magic, would bring us back to the surface. Maybe we wouldn't drown or get crushed by the water pressure. That was a lot of maybes. Even if we managed it, the 9 daughters of Aegir had sucked us under the ocean once before. I didn't see why they couldn't do it again. Somehow, I needed to stop them from following us. I scanned the battle. Hearthstone raced past me, throwing runes at the giantesses trying to chase him. The rune seemed to do the best job. Every time it blasted a giantess, she turned into a puddle for several seconds. Not much, but it was something. I glanced at the walls of the feast hall and had an idea. "Hearth!" I yelled. I cursed my own stupidity. One of these days, I would get over my habit of yelling for my deaf friend's attention. I ran after him, ducking past Grasping Wave, who Mallory Keene was driving around the room with her dagger handles like a combat robot. I grabbed Hearth's sleeve for his attention. "That rune," I signed. "What?" "L-A-G-A-Z," he fingerspelled. "Water, or..." He made a gesture I'd never seen. One hand horizontal, the fingers of the other hand trickling under it. I got the idea. Drip, leak, or maybe liquefy. "Can you do that to the wall?" I asked. "Or the ceiling?" Hearth's mouth quirked, which for him was a diabolical grin. He nodded. "Wait for my signal," I signed. Pitching Wave surged between us, yelling, "Rawr!" And Hearthstone plunged back into the melee. I had to figure out how to separate my friends from the giantesses. Then we might be able to collapse part of the feast hall on top of the 9 sisters while we made our getaway. I doubted that would hurt our enemies, but it might at least surprise them and slow them down. The problem was, I didn't know how to break up the fight. I doubted I could blow a whistle and call for a jump ball. Jack flew back and forth, harassing giantesses with his deadly blade and his even deadlier rendition of a 70s disco classic. Kolga blasted sheets of ice across the carpet, causing half-born Gunderson to wipe out. Bulgua fought with TJ, red coral sword against bayonet. Grasping Wave finally managed to pull Mallory off her back. The giantess would have ripped her apart, but Blitzen tossed a dinner plate that smashed the giantess in the face. One of Blitz's unsung skills, he was killer at Dwarven Ultimate Frisbee. Heminglava lunged for Samira. She caught Sam's legs, but Alex lashed out with his garrote. The giantess suddenly lost several inches around her waistline. Actually, her entire waistline. She crumpled to the floor, neatly bisected, and dissolved into seafoam. Hearthstone caught my eye. "When the rune?" I wished I had an answer. My friends couldn't keep up the fight forever. I considered summoning the Peace of Frey, my super timeout power that blasts everybody's weapons out of their hands. But the giantesses weren't really using weapons, and I didn't think my friends would appreciate being disarmed. I needed help. Desperately. So, I did something that didn't come easy for me. I looked toward the watery ceiling and prayed earnestly, not snarkily. "Okay, Frey, Dad, please. I know I sounded ungrateful earlier about the bright yellow ship, but we're about to die down here. So if you've got any help you could send me, I'd really appreciate it. Amen. Love, Magnus. Magnus Chase, in case you were wondering." I winced. I really sucked at praying. I also wasn't sure what help a god of summer could send me at the bottom of Massachusetts Bay.
"Hello,"
said a voice right next to me. I leaped about a foot into the air, which I thought was pretty restrained under the circumstances. Standing at my side was a man in his late 50s, stout and sun-weathered as if he'd spent decades as a lifeguard. He wore a pale blue polo shirt and cargo shorts, and his feet were bare. His feathery hair and close-cropped beard were the color of honey, flecked with gray. He smiled like we were old friends, though I was sure I'd never seen him before. Hi, I said. Living in Valhalla, you get used to strange entities popping up out of nowhere. Still, this seemed like an odd time for a casual encounter.
I'm your grandfather, he offered.
Right, I said. Because what was I supposed to say? The guy looked nothing like Grandpa or Grandma Chase, but I figured he was talking about the other side of my family tree. The Vanir side. Now, if I could just remember the name of Frey's dad, I would have been all set.
Hi, Grandpa.
Your father can't do much in the ocean, said Grandpa Frey Dad.
But I can. Want some help?
Yes, I said, which perhaps was foolish. I couldn't be sure this guy was who he said he was. And accepting help from a powerful being always puts you in their debt.
Great!
He patted me on the arm.
I'll meet you on the surface when this is all done, okay?
I nodded.
Mm-hmm.
My newfound grandfather strode into the midst of the battle.
Hello, girls! How's it going?
The fighting fizzled to a stop. The giantesses retreated warily toward the dinner table. My friend staggered and stumbled in my direction. Bloed bared her red-stained teeth.
Niord, you are not welcome here.
Niord, that's his name. I made a mental note to send him a card on Grandparents' Day. Was Grandparents' Day a thing with Vikings?
Oh, come now, Blodegada, the god said cheerfully. Can't an old friend get a cup of mead? Let's talk like civilized sea deities.
These mortals are ours,
growled Grasping Wave.
You have no right.
Ah, but you see, they are under my protection now. Which means we're back to our old conflict of interests, eh?
The giantesses hissed and snarled. Clearly, they wanted to tear Niord to pieces, but were afraid to try.
Besides, Niord said, one of my friends here has a trick to show you. Don't you, Hearthstone?
Hearthstone locked eyes with me. I nodded. Hearth tossed the Lagat's rune straight up, past the lost soul chandelier. I didn't see how it could reach the ceiling 100 feet above, but the stone seemed to get lighter and lighter as it ascended. It hit the peak of the rafters, exploding into a blazing golden Lagat's, and the watery roof crashed inward, burying the giantesses and Niord in a million-gallon shower.
Now!
I yelled to my friends. We plowed together in a desperate group hug as the wave hit us. My handkerchief expanded around us. The collapsing hull squirted us into the deep, like toothpaste from a tube, and we shot toward the surface on our bright yellow Viking warship. Chapter 12. The Guy with the Feet. There's nothing like erupting from the depths of the ocean on a magical Viking ship. It sucks. A lot. My eyes felt like grapes that had been lagatsed. My ears popped with such force I thought I'd been shot in the back of the head. I gripped the rail, shivering and disoriented, as the big banana landed on the waves,
wham,
and knocked my jaw out of alignment. The sail unfurled on its own. The oars unlocked, pushed into the water, and began to row by themselves. We sailed under starry skies, the waves calm and glittering, no land to be seen in any direction.
The ship is self-driving, I noted.
Next to me, Niord popped into existence, looking no worse for being caught in the collapse of Aegir's Hall. Niord chuckled.
Well, yes, Magnus, of course the ship is self-driving. Were you trying to row it the old-fashioned way?
I ignored my friends glaring at me. Maybe.
All you have to do is will the ship to take you where you want to go,
Niord told me.
Nothing else is required.
I thought about all that time I'd spent with Percy Jackson learning bowlines and mizzenmasts, only to find out the Viking gods had invented Google boats. I bet the ship would even magically assist me if I needed to fall off the mast.
Magnus?
Alex spat a clump of sea giantess hair out of his mouth. Wait, her mouth. I wasn't sure when it had happened, but I was pretty certain Alex had shifted gender.
Aren't you going to introduce us to your friend?
Right, I said. Everybody, this is Freydad. I mean, Niord. Blitzen scowled. He muttered under his breath.
Might have known.
Halfborn Gunderson's eyes widened.
Niord? God of ships? The Niord?
Then the berserker turned and vomited over the railing. TJ stepped forward, hands raised like, we come in peace.
Halfborn wasn't making an editorial comment, great Niord. We appreciate your help. He just has a head injury.
Niord smiled.
That's perfectly fine. You all should get some rest. I did what I could to ease your decompression sickness. But you're going to feel bad for a day or two. Also, you have blood trickling from your nose. Oh, and coming out of your ears.
I realized he was talking about everyone. We were leaking red like Blo de Cotta, but at least all my friends seemed to be in one piece.
So, Niord, said Mallory, wiping her nose. Before we rest, are you sure those 9 giantesses aren't going to pop up again any minute and, you know, destroy us?
No, no, he promised. You're under my protection and safe for the present. Now perhaps you would give me some time to talk with my grandson.
Alex picked a last strand of giantess hair off her tongue.
No problem, Freydad. Oh, and by the way, guys, my pronouns are she and her now. It's a new day.
Hooray for me being right. Samira stepped forward, her fists clenched. Her wet hijab clung to her head like an affectionate octopus.
Magnus, down in the feast hall, do you realize what you agreed to? Do you have any idea?
Niord raised his hand.
My dear, perhaps you'd let me discuss that with him? Dawn is coming. Shouldn't you eat your suhoor meal?
Sam gazed east, where the stars were beginning to fade. She worked her jaw muscles.
I suppose you're right, though I don't feel much like it. Anybody want to join me?
TJ shouldered his rifle.
Sam, when it comes to eating, I always have your back. Let's go below and see if the galley is still in one piece. Anybody else?
Yep.
Mallory eyed the sea god. For some reason, she seemed fascinated by his bare feet.
We'll give Magnus some family time.
Alex followed, doing her best to steady Halfborn Gunderson. Maybe it was just my imagination, but before Alex went down the ladder, she gave me a look like, you okay? Or maybe she was just wondering why I was so weird, as per usual. That left only Blitz and Hearth, who were fussing with each other's outfits. Hearth's scarf had somehow gotten tied around his arm like a sling. Blitzen's ascot had wrapped around his head like a fancy do-rag. They were trying to help while swatting each other away, thus not accomplishing much.
Dwarf and elf.
Niord's tone was relaxed, but my friends immediately stopped their fussing and faced the god.
Stay with us, Niord said. We should confer.
Hearthstone looked agreeable enough, but Blitz scowled even deeper.
We settled on the foredeck, which was the only place where we wouldn't get tripped by the self-rowing oars, bonked by the boom, or strangled by the magical rigging. Niord sat with his back to the railing, his legs far apart. He wriggled his toes as if to get them a good tan. This didn't give the rest of us a lot of room to sit, but since Niord was the god and he'd just saved us, I figured he'd earned the privilege of manspreading. Blitz and Hearth sat side by side across from the god. I squatted against the prow, though I'd never done well sitting backward in a moving vehicle. I hoped I wasn't going to become the second crew member to vomit in the god's presence.
"Well," Niord said, "this is nice."
I felt like my head had been run through a Play-Doh press. I'd been drenched in mead and salt water. I'd barely touched my vegetarian option meal, and my stomach was devouring itself. Drops of blood from my nose splattered in my lap. Otherwise, yeah, it was real nice. Sometime during our ascent, Jack had returned to pendant form. He hung from my neck chain, buzzing against my sternum as if humming a message. Compliment his feet? I must have either imagined it or misunderstood him. Maybe Jack meant compliment his feet. Thanks again for your help, Grandad, I said. Niord smiled.
Just call me Niord. Grandad makes me feel old.
I figured he'd been alive for 2,000 or 3,000 years, but I didn't want to insult him. Right, sorry. So, did Frey send you, or did you just happen to be in the neighborhood?
Oh, I hear all desperate prayers spoken at sea.
Niord wriggled his toes. Was it my imagination, or was he intentionally showing off his feet? I mean, they were well manicured. No calluses, not a fleck of dirt or tar. Toenails trimmed, buffed to perfection. Zero toe gunk or weird hobbit foot fur. But still.
I was happy to assist, Niord continued. Aegir and I go back a long way. He and Ran and their daughters represent the raging forces of nature. The sea's raw power, blah, blah, blah. Whereas I...
You're the god of fishing, Blitzen said.
Niord frowned.
Other things as well, Mr. Dwarf.
Please call me Blitz, said Blitz. Mr. Dwarf was my father.
Hearthstone grunted impatiently, the way he often does when Blitzen is about to get himself killed by a deity.
Niord is god of many things, he signed. Sailing, shipbuilding. Exactly, Niord said,
apparently having no difficulty with Hearth's ASL.
Trading, fishing, navigation, any occupation that involves the ocean. Even farming, since the tides and storms affects crop growing. Aegir is the nasty, brutal side of the ocean. I'm the guy you pray to when you want the sea to work for you.
Humph, Blitz said.
I didn't know why he was being antagonistic. Then I remembered that his father, Beeli, had died checking the chains that bound Fenris Wolf on his island. Beeli's slashed and torn clothing had eventually washed up on the shores of Nidavellir. No safe homeward voyage for him. Why would Blitzen consider the sea anything but cruel? I wanted to let Blitz know that I understood, that I was sorry, but he kept his gaze firmly on the deck.
Anyway, Niord said, Aegir and his family have been my, competitors for centuries. They try to drown mortals. I try to save them. They destroy ships. I build better ships. We're not enemies, exactly. But we do keep each other on our toes.
He emphasized the word toes, stretching out his feet a little more. This was now officially getting weird. Jack's voice buzzed in my head more forcefully.
compliment his feet.
You have beautiful feet, Grand, Niord. The god beamed.
Oh, these old things? Well, you're kind. Did you know I once won a beauty contest with my feet? The prize was my wife.
I glanced at Blitz and Hearth to see if I was imagining this entire conversation. Please, Hearth signed with zero enthusiasm. Tell us the story.
Well, if you insist.
Niord gazed at the stars, perhaps recalling his glory days in the foot beauty pageant circuit.
Most of the story isn't important. The gods killed this giant, Thiassi. His daughter Skadi demanded vengeance. Blood killing, blah blah blah. To prevent further war and stop the blood feud, Odin agreed to let Skadi marry a god of her choosing.
Blitzen scowled.
And she chose you?
No!
Niord clapped his hands in delight.
Oh, it was so funny. You see, Odin only let Skadi choose her husband by looking at the god's feet.
Why? I asked. Why not noses or elbows? Niord paused.
I never considered that. Not sure. Anyway, Skadi figured the most handsome husband would have the most beautiful feet, right? So we all stood behind a curtain, and she went down the line looking for Balder, because he was always the one everyone thought was the most handsome.
He rolled his eyes and mouthed, "Overrated."
But I had the most beautiful feet of all the gods, as Odin must have known. Skadi picked me. You should have seen the look on her face when she pulled back the curtain and saw who she had to marry.
Blitzen crossed his arms.
So, Odin used you to trick the poor lady. You were a booby prize.
Of course not.
Niord looked more startled than angry.
It was a great match.
I'm sure it was, I said, anxious to prevent Blitzen from getting turned into a dinghy, or whatever other punishment the ship god could deal out.
You two lived happily ever after?
Niord shifted his back against the rail.
Well, no. We separated shortly thereafter. She wanted to live in the mountains. I liked the beach. Then Skadi had an affair with Odin. Then we got a divorce. But that's not the point. My feet on the day of the contest, they were amazing. They won the hand of Skadi, the beautiful ice giantess.
I was tempted to ask if he only won her hand, or the rest of her too. But I decided against it. Blitzen stared at me. He twitched his hands like he wanted to sign something ugly about Niord, but then remembered that Niord could read ASL. He sighed and stared at his lap. Niord frowned.
What's wrong, Mr. Dwarf? You don't look impressed.
Oh, he is, I promised. Just speechless. We can all tell that your feet are very important to you. What is your beauty secret? Hearthstone asked politely.
Several centuries of standing in the surf, Niord confided. It smoothed my feet into the perfectly sculpted masterpieces you see today. That and regular pedicures with a paraffin wax treatment.
He wiggled his shiny toenails.
I was debating about buffing or no buffing, but I think the buffing really makes those piggies shine.
I nodded and agreed that he had very shiny piggies. I also wished I didn't have such an odd family.
In fact, Magnus, said Niord, that is one of the reasons I wanted to meet you.
To show me your feet? He laughed.
No, silly.
By which I was pretty sure he meant yes.
To give you some advice.
On how to buff his toenails? Blitz asked.
No.
Niord hesitated.
Although I could do that, I have two important bits of wisdom that may help you on your quest to stop Loki.
We enjoy bits of wisdom, Hearth signed.
The first is this, Niord said. To reach the Ship of the Dead, you must pass through the borderlands between Niflheim and Jotunheim. This is harsh territory. Mortals can perish from the cold in seconds. If that does not kill you, the giants and draugrs will.
Blitz grumbled. I'm not enjoying this particular bit of wisdom.
Ah, but there is one safe harbor, Niord said. Or at least one potentially safe harbor. Or at least one harbor where you might not be instantly killed. You should seek out Thunderholm, the fortress of my beloved Skadi. Tell her I sent you.
Your beloved? I asked. Aren't you divorced?
Yes.
But you're still friends.
I haven't seen her in centuries.
Niord got a distant look in his eyes.
And we didn't exactly part on good terms. But I have to believe she still holds some affection for me. Seek her out. If she grants you safe harbor for my sake, that will tell me she's forgiven me.
And if she doesn't welcome us? Hearth asked.
That would be disappointing.
I took this to mean, you will all end up in Scotty's meat locker. I didn't like the idea of being my grandfather's test balloon for a reconciliation with his ex-wife. Then again, a potentially safe harbor sounded better than freezing to death in 20 seconds. Unfortunately, I got the feeling we hadn't heard Niord's worst helpful advice yet. I waited for the other shoe to drop, even though Niord did not appear to own any shoes.
What's the second bit of wisdom? I asked.
Niord's focus snapped back to me.
Oh, yes. The point of my story about my beautiful feet.
There was a point? Blitz sounded genuinely surprised.
Of course, Niord said. The most unexpected thing can be the key to victory. Balder was the most handsome of the gods, but because of my feet, I won the girl.
Whom you later separated from and divorced, Blitz said.
Would you stop dwelling on that?
Niord rolled his eyes at me like dwarves these days.
My point, dear grandson, is that you will need to use unexpected means to defeat Loki. You began to realize that in Aegir's Hall, didn't you?
I didn't remember biting off any clumps of sea giantess hair, but a ball of the stuff seemed to be forming in my throat.
Flighting, I said. I'll have to beat Loki in a contest of insults?
New gray whiskers spread like frost through Niord's beard.
A flighting is much more than a series of simple put-downs, he warned. It's a duel of prestige, power, confidence. I was present at Aegir's Hall when Loki flighted with the gods. He shamed us so badly.
Niord seemed to deflate, as if just thinking about it made him older and weaker.
Words can be more lethal than blades, Magnus. And Loki is a master of words. To beat him, you must find your inner poet. Only one thing can give you a chance to beat Loki at his own game.
Mead, I guessed. Kvasir's mead.
The answer didn't sit right with me. I'd been on the streets long enough to see how well mead improved people's skills. Pick your poison. Beer, wine, vodka, whiskey. Folks claimed they needed it to get through the day. They called it liquid courage. It made them funnier, smarter, more creative. Except it didn't. It just made them less able to tell how unfunny and stupid they were acting.
It's not merely mead, my grandfather said,
reading my expression.
Kvasir's mead is the most valuable elixir ever created. Finding it will not be easy.
He turned to Hearthstone and Blitzen.
You know this, don't you? You know that the quest may claim both your lives.
Chapter 13. Stupid Exploding Grandfathers. You should have led with that, I said, my pulse jackhammering in my neck. Hearth and Blitz do not die. That's a deal-breaker. Niord's toothy smile was as white as Scandinavian snow. I wished I knew his secret for staying so calm. Zen meditation? Fishing? Hotel Valhalla yoga classes?
Ah, Magnus, you are so much like your father.
I blinked. We're both blonde and like the outdoors?
You both have kind hearts, said Niord. Frey would do anything for a friend. He always loved easily and deeply, sometimes unwisely. You have the proof of that around your neck.
I curled my fingers around Jack's runestone. I knew the story. Frey had given up the Sword of Summer so he could win the love of a beautiful giantess. Because he had forsaken his weapon, he would be slain at Ragnarok. The moral of the story, as Jack liked to put it, blades before babes. The thing was, pretty much everybody would be slain at Ragnarok anyway. I didn't blame my dad for his choices. If he didn't fall in love easily, I would never have been born. Fine, I'm like my dad, I said. I still choose my friends over a cup of mead. I don't care if it's pumpkin spice or peach lambic.
It's blood, actually, Niord said. And god spit.
I started to feel seasick, and I didn't think it was because of the direction I was facing. Come again? Niord opened his hand. Above his palm floated the miniature glowing figure of a bearded man in woolen robes. His face was open and cheerful, his expression caught in mid-laugh. Seeing him, it was hard not to lean forward, smile, and want to hear what he was laughing about.
This was Kvasir.
Niord's tone took on an edge of sadness.
The most perfect being ever created. Millennia ago, when the Vanir and Aesir gods ended their war, all of us spit into a golden cup. From that mixture sprang Kvasir, our living peace treaty.
Suddenly, I didn't want to lean so close to the little glowing man. The dude was made of spit.
Makes sense, Blitzen grunted. God saliva is an excellent crafting ingredient.
Hearthstone tilted his head. He seemed fascinated by the holographic figure. He signed, "Why would anyone murder him?"
Murder?
I asked. Niord nodded, lightning flickering in his eyes. For the first time, I got the impression that my grandfather wasn't just some laid-back guy with nice feet. He was a powerful deity who could probably crumple our worship with a single thought.
Kvasir wandered the nine worlds, bringing wisdom, advice, and justice wherever he went. Everyone loved him. And then he was slaughtered. Horrible. Inexcusable.
Loki? I guessed, because that seemed like the logical next word in that list. Niord barked a short, sour laugh.
Not this time, no. It was dwarves.
He glanced at Blitzen.
No offense.
Blitzen shrugged.
Dwarves aren't all the same.
Like gods. If Niord sensed an insult, he didn't let on. He closed his hand and the tiny spit man disappeared.
The details of the murder aren't important. Afterward,
Kvasir's blood was drained and mixed with honey to create a magical mead. It became the most prized, most coveted drink in the Nine Worlds. Ugh. I put my hand to my mouth. My idea of which details should be left out of the story was very different from Niord's. You want me to drink mead that is made from blood that is made from godspit? Niord stroked his beard.
When you put it that way, it sounds bad. But yes, Magnus, whoever drinks Kvasir's mead finds their inner poet. The perfect words come to you. The poetry flows. The oration dazzles. The stories enthrall all who listen. With such power, you could stand toe to toe, insult to insult, in a flighting with Loki.
My mind pitched and swayed along with my stomach. Why did I have to be the one to challenge Loki? My inner voice responded, or maybe it was Jack. Because you volunteered at the feast, dummy. Everybody heard you. I rubbed my temples, wondering if it was possible for a brain to literally explode from too much information. That's one death I'd never experienced in Valhalla. Hearthstone stared at me with concern.
You want a rune? He signed. Or some aspirin?
I shook my head. So Uncle Randolph's notebook hadn't been a trick. He'd left an actual, viable plan for me to follow. In the end, despite all he'd done, it seemed like the old fool had experienced some remorse. He had tried to help me. I wasn't sure if that made me feel better or worse. What about the name Bulwark? I asked. Who is that? Niord smiled.
That was Odin's alias. For a long time, the giants possessed all of Kvasir's mead. Odin went in disguise to steal some back for the gods. He succeeded. He even scattered drops of mead around Midgard to inspire mortal bards. But the gods' supply of the elixir was exhausted centuries ago. The only mead that remains is a tiny portion, jealously guarded by the giants. To get it, you will have to follow in Bolverk's footsteps and steal what only Odin was ever able to steal.
Perfect, Blitz muttered. So how do we do that?
More important, I said, why is it so dangerous for Hearth and Blitz? And how can we make it not be? I had an overwhelming desire to write a letter for Hearth and Blitz. Dear Cosmic Forces, please excuse my friends from their deadly fate. They are not feeling well today. At the very least, I wanted to outfit them with safety helmets, life jackets, and reflective decals before sending them off. Niord faced Hearthstone and Blitzen. He signed, "You already know your task." He made a stick figure man standing in his palm. Ground. Then two fists, one tapping the other. Work.